Ihr seid bereit?
Ja. Ich denke, ich fange jetzt einfach mal an. First one question, somebody here who doesn't speak German? Okay, some people here, so I will do it in English. Yes, this is a presentation about voice over IP. It is a basic presentation, and it simply shows what voice over IP is and what kind of protocols we have. But first, a short introduction about me. I'm a student in the European Study Course Mechatronics. This is located at the Niederrhein University in Krefeld and the Fontys University in Venlo. It's the Netherlands, and yes. Further, I'm a member of the Chaos Computer Club in Düsseldorf, or called Chaosdorf. And from September this year on, I'm on a trainee in Hungary, in Budapest. It's the Hungarian telephony provider. It's called MATAV. It's a subsidiary of Deutsche Telekom. And there I work with voice over IP. I have to set up a network there, an H3-to-3 network. You will hear about it further in this presentation. So first, I will show a little bit about where voice over IP is. And then we will go through the protocols. There are three types of protocols. The first one is called MGCP or Megaco or H248. It isn't really the same, but it's not so different. So next is about H3-to-3. It's a common protocol. I think nearly everybody has heard about it. And the last protocol I will show you is SIP. Then I will do a short comparison between H3-to-3 and SIP. Wherefore is voice over IP? The first thing is that it uses IP to carry both the control and the media streams. The usual telephony network, you only have this analogous networks. You have simply analogous pings, or it's hard to say in English. Sorry. It is a little bit different to ISDN. In ISDN, we build a digital network, an analogous network, and voice over IP is only in a real IP network. So everything goes over IP, and so it is also integration of voice and data networks. Both is built in one terminal, I would say. And it integrates also the traditional telephony network. So you can do the old well-known telephony services, like the simple phone calls. It's the first one what you want to do. Furthermore, you can do conferences. You can do voice conferences, video conferences, and a little bit more. So there's a huge amount of not implemented services, and I don't know exactly what the future will bring us, but for now it's so in voice over IP that we transferred all the old services we know now into this IP network. Yes, you can also do call transfers, call waiting, call hold, consultation. I think you know this all. Yes, and it's a seamless transition to new multimedia services. The protocols. I said that before, that we have the NGCP, then HBT3 and then SIP. NGCP, it is set up by the telco community. It is, I would say, the first try of transformation from the analog network, telephony network, to an IP network, and it was built for a good integration of SS7 with voice over IP, and it's a master slave technology, so it's similar to the digital PBXs, that is, for example, the ICN network. I don't want to talk so much about that. Sorry. So that is the right. HBT3 is more important now. It is a protocol from the telecommunication standardization sector of the ITU. The ITU is an international telecommunication union. And, for example, it set up the protocols for modems or so. I think everybody knows the protocol V90 or something like that. So it's called H323. That's the name of the protocol. And the longer name is Packet-Based Multimedia Communication Systems. The first draft started in 1995, some years ago, and it was first approved in 1996, so they used 1 year for the approval. And the actual version is now the version 4. They implemented a lot more services, and for example, faster calling. That's one of the important services, that the call procedure is faster. As in the philosophy of HBT3 is, I would read it from this paper, HBT3 was designed with a good understanding of the requirements for multimedia communication over IP networks, including audio, video, and data conferencing. It defines an entire unified system for performing these functions, leveraging the strengths of the IETF and ITUT protocols. So I hope you know the IETF. The IETF is another union, I would say, or not really a union, but they've done some other protocols. For example, the RFCs, the request for comments, they are set up from the IETF. And so H323 tries to collect all these protocol types into one protocol to what will use these other, and that you can do phone calls with it. The devices of H323 with first the terminal, then gateway, gatekeepers, and multi-point controller units. The terminal is a user endpoint, and it provides real-time two-way communications. So it is, the mandatory thing of this terminal is voice streaming. Video streaming and data streaming is optional, so first endpoint has to provide voice streaming. For example, maybe you know voice over IP phones. These are usual phones. They look like ICN phones, and you can do your calls with them, so they only provide voice. For example, you know these H320 phones. These are the ICN video phones. They are a little bit older than H323, but they can work together. That is no problem for them. So the supported protocols of the terminals are H323, of course, and it should also provide H245, that is a protocol for channel using and the capabilities. Furthermore, the Q931, it is for call setup and signaling. And another important protocol is RAS, that means registration admission status, and you need it for requesting a gatekeeper. I will talk further more about it. And at least RTP and RTCP, this is for sequencing audio and status video packages, so that everything works in real time and without delay. The gateway, a task is translation between the networks or between protocols. For example, it translates into switched circuit networks, for example ICN or packet-based networks, or translates between the protocols H245 to H221. It's also a protocol for the control channel usage and capabilities here. It's H245 or to H242. Some other terminals use other protocols. I mentioned the H320 terminal, this ISDN video terminal, and it uses some other protocols for the conference. And it translates also between audio codecs or video codecs. The gatekeeper. Yes, the gatekeeper. It's funny that the gatekeeper is optional in an H33 network, but it is essential. If you want to do communication within an H33 network, you have to use the gatekeeper. Otherwise, you can't really find any users. So, the task is user information. It provides information about the users that are logged in into the gatekeeper, and it's something like a name server, I would say. So it manages the communications inside the H33 network and the address translation. So from one part of from one address type to another address type. You can, for example, use email addresses as a username or H323 IDs as a username. So it translates between these different addresses. And it also does the call control. For example, gatekeeper logs everything that every phone call in the network. So you can do the billing with this gatekeeper and with the output from the gatekeeper, and it's simple, this gatekeeper. Also does routing services, system management, security policies. These are all tasks of the gatekeeper, and endpoints to the gatekeeper. These are H3 terminals or gateways or the multi-point controller units. They look like as usual users, but you can access to them in different manners. Multi-point controller units. The task of them is maintaining all audio, video, and data control streams, and they are mandatory for conferences. In usual phone calls, if you want to call one person, only one person, you don't use MCUs. They're not necessary for that. In conferences, they will keep the different users in the same time, I would say, so that they don't have a delay between them. And they are split into two devices. First, the multipoint controller and the multipoint processor. So the controller controls everything, the processor, for example, converts the video data. So if you have a big picture, it will convert it to a smaller one so that somebody with a small bandwidth can also receive all pictures from the calling partners. And yes, usually they are located inside the gateway or gatekeeper inside the network. So, example for a call inside the H3 network. Here's a caller. And he will assess to the callee, okay, they don't have names for now, but first, if you type in, you will call somebody, it will look inside the gatekeeper. If the caller is registered into the callee is registered into this gatekeeper, the gatekeeper answers, no, I don't know it, it's this RAS transmission, so this register admission status transmission is it. And the gatekeeper says also, there's another gatekeeper, you can ask this gatekeeper. So the caller will now ask the other gatekeeper in another zone. The gatekeeper responds or asks the callee first if it is possible to reach him. For example, an abort message could be that the callee phones now, so you can't reach it, or it isn't nearby. So then the gatekeeper will respond to the caller. And the last message is that the caller will directly assess to the callee. So after the gatekeeper found the callee, the gatekeeper will be out of the real streaming of or the real call. So the transmission is now only between the caller and the callee, and the gatekeepers are free for another for other requests. Yes, this is a picture I have done by myself. A usual gatekeeper has a status board where you can assess and can look how it works or how the status is. And this is a picture of two gatekeepers. They are between two different zones we saw before. And in the first gatekeeper here, there are two caller or two users registered. In this type, they have numbers. The numbers are written down in the document E164. And yes, they're like usual telephone numbers. So you see they are both registered, and in the second gatekeeper there's only one user registered, and the red colored users means that they are calling for now. So the gatekeeper knows who's calling, and you can read out from the messages here which person is calling another person. Just an example. Okay, that was with H323, and the next protocol type is SIP. It's called Session Initiation Protocol. It's written down in the RFC 2543. It's from the Internet Engineering Task Force, the IETF, I mentioned before. And the draft was in 1996, and it was and it's approved in 1999, so they need a longer time, and it was later than H323. The philosophy of SRP was designed to set up a session between two points. It has a loose concept of a call, that being a session with media streams. Has no support for multimedia conferencing, and the integration of sometimes disappeared standards is largely left up to each vendor. Yes, the answers of SRP. SRP is based on HTTP, so the basic request looks like HTTP messages, and it's also based on email or SMTP. The addressing style slides I will show an example further. The addresses of the users look like URLs, so you can call somebody with an, I would say, email address. It looks like an email address or like a URL. You will see it further. And it's based on TCP and UDP. So it can also do, for example, broadcasting messages. If SAP proxy is looking for somebody, it will do broadcast messages and they will respond. And it uses also RTP, like HTTP/3 for the voice session. SIP is divided into two parts. On the one hand, we have the client. They could be terminals. And the terminals itself act as a user agent server or user agent client, so it's a server client network. And there could be soft phones or IP phones. So, for example, in the computer itself, sensor phone, they could be hardware phones and look like usual phones you know now. Then we have gateways, and their primary task is a translation, and it's the same like in HTTP/3, so translation between the networks or translation between protocols or translation between audio or video protocols. Then we have servers. In HTTP/3, we only have this gatekeeper as a real server, I said, and here it's divided into a proxy server. This proxy server receives SIP messages and forwards them to the next SIP server in the network. And then redirect servers, they provide this information about the next hop for an SIP call. And register servers, they will request you locations for user agent client registrations, as they are often co-located with a proxy server. So in a real network, they are on the same address. So the example for SIP messages. In SIP, these commands are called methods, and these methods could be, for example, invite, or egg, buy, cancel, option, register, info. So this is that if you want to call somebody, this messages go there. I'll go further. Then we have the server responses, and I think nearly everybody has seen something like that. It's the same like in HTTP. So, in SMTP, we have also the server responses, and they are divided into some groups. For example, in the group one, there are informational server responses, like trying, ringing. On the group two, for successful. The group three, for redirection. Four, for request failure. So it looks really like known protocols. This is an example of a SIP message. The first part looks like, like an email. So here the caller invites over this SIP URL. So it starts with SAP, double point, and then something like that looks an email address, that is a user ID. And then the protocol type, SAP version 2, okay. And it tells you, or it tells the server where it goes through. And then authorization messages and so on. And it is from ABLE, okay. It's also a SIP message here behind it. It's really like email. And then in the, I would say, body, there are the informations about the wished call. For example, in this type, it is an audio call. And you can also bring a small message. So you can also use SIP for instant messaging. A call example for SAP. It looks similar to this example of HTTP/3, so we have also a caller here that will request a SIP proxy. This SIP proxy will request the next SIP proxy if the callee isn't in the same domain. And then got some requests between this proxy and the callee, and the caller will get at least the I would say IP number of the callee and will access them directly. Now the last chapter, the conversation between H3T3 and SIP. The philosophy of H3T3 is that it is one, or that is the old world, and it is only transferred from the known analogous network to a real IP network. So I would say nothing isn't invented new, and everything is just transferred. And in SIP they built a real new protocol type, and they took a lot of ideas in it, so it becomes something real new, and it isn't like the old world, like this analogous network. So it looks that it is simpler and not so complex like H3T3, because you have a lot of problems in H3T3. For example, the security in H3T3 goes over SS7, and to implement that, it is really hard. And SAP, you can use private network, virtual private network, VPNs, and it's not so hard to implement. Then another feature of SAP is that SIP messages are formatted as text. You saw that before, that this message is normal ASCII coded message, and in comparison to that, H3T3 has binary messages. You can't read them so fast. You have to decompress them first, and or decode them first, and then you can read what this message is. It's a hard problem. Then the addressing is different. In H3T3 you use several addressing styles, for example E164, that is a usual phone number. We saw that before in this example of a gatekeeper status. H3T3 identities, it's like usual username, or you can use URLs that looks like this SAP messages, but not really the same, or email addresses. And in SIP we have only this URL style addressing. So it is, I would say, easier to look at it and to find failures or so. Then H3T3 is very complex. If you want to set up a call, you have to do a lot of transmissions between the caller and the gatekeeper, and between the gatekeeper and the callee, and it's really hard, and it takes a long time. So call isn't so fast. And therefore they built in fast call, and so you have some more messages in H3T3. It's not really so a good protocol. They patched a lot in it. So it doesn't look really horizontal. So in different SAP, they took longer for this protocol. They needed 3 years to build it up, and so they implemented a lot more features in the first type of the protocol, or in the first version of the protocol. That was a good thing, so. Services. Yes, it's a good thing of SAP that it can fork calls, so you can have several phones and tell the phones that you want to receive calls to this and this number. So you can call one person with one number or with one I would say SAP URL, and all his phones will ring. In H3 you can only access the number to one phone. You can forward phone calls, but you can't say that you want to receive numbers on different phones. The messages, yes, the messages looks provided in H3, and in SAP we saw that they are good documented and that you can read them very fast because they are ASCII messages. You can mix videos in SAP, so you can do conference with voice media or with videos. And in H3, you have to negotiate to one protocol, for example, or to one type. So you have to say that you only want to do video sessions or you want to do voice sessions. So first you have to tell what you want. As I said before, that the interworking with SS7 is problematic in H3.3, and in SIP you can do it better or faster or easier to implement. And a lot of troubles in interconnecting calls to and from PSTN. We have these problems too at Matter where I work now. And it's a hard problem, for example, if you use SS7, that's because you want to have a network that is more secure, then you have to translate it back before you throw it into the PSTN networks. Or from the other side, if you want to call somebody from the PSTN network in the IP network, you have to look for the IPs, or the gatekeeper has to store the IPs, and it isn't really to implement. Another feature of SAP is that you can act with a prior list. For example, you can tell SAP or the SAP client that you first want to try to call somebody with H3.3 and then with SAP. Furthermore, over usual PSTN network. That's a good thing of SAP. Yes, the status now of these protocols. From H3.3, it's the fact that it is really popularity. For example, if you use NetMeeting in Windows, it is based on H3.3, and you can also do calls to an open H3.3 client on Linux. I tested it, and that works fine, really fine. And I've never found a real good client for SAP, as said. So every vendor concentrates now on H3.3 to show something, because the protocol came out in 1996, and now 5 years later we don't know any real working H3.3 network, and they want to do one now, so they concentrate on H3.3 and push SAP into the background. But on the other hand, it is easier, SAP. Yes, and the majority of existing IP telephony products, they rely on H3.3. That is the result that everybody looks on H3.3 and not SAP. Yes, okay, for SAP they develop the products, but they aren't built for now. Okay, summary. We've heard about where for voice over PS. We heard about a little bit about MGCP and so on. H3.3, the SIP, and the comparison about it. I wrote some links. The first link here, Packet Driver, is a really good link. There you can find, I would say, nearly every protocol that is related to H3.3. You can find a good comparison between H3.3 and SIP, and you can find a lot of protocols to SIP. That's okay. On my personal homepage, there you can find the slides of this presentation. And now, on the end, do you have questions? Okay, in front. Oh, wait a moment, please.
The drawing, I mean, you showed about the calling procedure with H323 and with ZIP.
Yes.
Is it possible to just not use the signaling mechanisms and just directly connect to the client?
You can tell the client to use the IP number, yes, that is possible. So you can all connect to a client without a gatekeeper. That is possible because the gatekeeper is only optional. But the gatekeeper does this name server. So, for example, now in this network we don't have really IPs. We get every time another IP from our internet provider, and so this gatekeeper does this translation or this is user requesting, and you can assess somebody. So you can tell, call this IP number, and if the other person, the callee, has an H23 client working that will answer, then you can build up this call. There? Wait a moment, please.
How can I route these protocols, especially when both participants are located in masqueraded networks? We have this old peer-to-peer problem, and I think H323 uses is a multi-port protocol using TCP and UDP, and it's really behaving bad with firewalls and gateways and masquerading.
That is a real problem. If you are in a network that is masqueraded with only one IP address, you can't use it. You can't. There are some projects that build masquerading servers for H323, but every client has to have a real IP address. So that is connected already to server. Okay, you can start several clients on one machine. That's possible, and connect them through different ports. But you have a real problem if you do it in a masquerading network. SIP, they also have these problems, but you can solve it easier. The proxies for SIP, or the projects with proxies for SIP, they are further than the H323 proxies. They can do more now. I think you will find some information about it at Packetizer also, about the SIP proxy and this H323 proxies. Thank you. Wait a moment, please.
But the problem isn't the SIP proxy at masquerading, but we have a point-to-point RPC connection from one point to the other point, and so it isn't a problem of the SIP proxy. We need RPC proxy too, and that's a problem we have in the SIP communication, the port numbers and the IP addresses of the points, and then we, on the one hand, we have to change that information in the SIP packets, and on the other hand, we have to connect through a firewall with RPC, a direct connection. I think that's the same problem as H323.
Yes, that's right. Okay, my problem is that I haven't worked with proxies yet, with real IP addresses. So I don't know so much about it. I can only tell what I heard before, or what I read before, that the developing of SIP proxies is further than the developing of H323 proxies.
I think it's one of the most problems for companies to use voice over IP. Most companies have a big masquerading network and one firewall with one masquerading server, they can't use it. And if the company don't use voice over IP, I think the end users at home won't use it too.
Yes, that's the reason why many developers of voice over IP say we want to use, for example, IP version 6. So we have a lot more of IPs, and we can attach one IP to every machine, but we still have the problems inside the companies that they want to use a firewall. So mostly they try to build up networks with inside virtual private networks, VPNs, and then connect inside this VPN. So that is another solution, but it's still complicated, yes. Sorry. Yes, please?
Is there some built-in crypto, at least in the media stream, or do I have to provide it in another layer, like VPN, IPsec, or like SSL, or something like that?
If they will use VPN or IPsec, for example, or the other one is I forgot it every time, sorry. But they use still develop protocols, so they're based on them. For example, SIP also uses DNS for locating the user. The username or the user URL is a usual client name with a domain name behind, and so it uses also DNS.
The media stream is not encrypted at all.
The media stream not, no. It won't be encrypted, but you can do it. You can implement it, you can tell the clients use this or that, but it's a hard work. Mostly, yeah, it's okay, but nobody will do it the first time. Don't forget. Excuse me?
So encryption is only possible in VPNs, virtual private networks, or so on?
You can also do encryption between two points without any gatekeeper, or if you call somebody else. I think there are some developments that will use encryption, but only for point-to-point calling, not for the calling within gatekeepers. Or within network, so that's then the back.
I have two questions. The first one is if there is IP version 6 support already in H323 or SIP. And the second question is if there are any codecs recommended for use for H323 or SIP communication. What you showed was a call setup procedure, but the media stream was not recognizable. I'm not an expert.
Okay, yes. First question. You can use IP version 6, but it depends on the client. The client have to use IP version 6. I know that this Open H323 client, there's an Open H323 client or a big project, it can use IP version 6. But, for example, NetMeeting on Windows, I don't think that it is possible to use it. It should be the same, I would say, because it's based on DNS, and if the DNS server can do IP version 6, it can locate the domain, so that wouldn't be the big problem. The second question was streams, the media streams. They use standardized media streams, what you usually use for video, for example, how it's called, MPEG. For video, it uses MPEG, or you can do MP3 streams. It depends on the processors that are behind, how fast they are, and so on. There were another question. Wait a moment, please. Direct question.
In English, the protocol has, or the codec has to be understood by every client participating in a communication.
Right.
So this is not depending on the performance the respective user has, but it has to be implemented on every terminal. Is that right?
Is that right? That depends on the clients, yes. So, but mostly they will negotiate what kind of protocol they will use. So usually you tell, for example, in SIP you tell which kind of protocols you can receive, and the other client will look which kind of protocols it can provide. So they will negotiate about it. Some more questions somewhere? Okay, you first.
What about authentication problem of the H23 client to get the gatekeeper? For example, in Italy, we have a broadband carrier that put in your house a little box on which you jack the telephone, and then phone will be delivered over IP network. If you use OH client of the open H23, you can do call, get every number you want on the telephone carrier, but the only authentication that is due by this black box is username and password, which
is
trustworthy.
Clear. You can build in authorization inside the H23 gatekeeper. Usually, a gatekeeper is requested automatically into a network. If you attach a client into a network, it will look for a gatekeeper. And then you can tell the gatekeeper it should ask the client for a user ID and a user password. So that's no problem. And the gatekeeper knows which number this client has, for example.
But the user ID and the password that is transferred from the terminal to the gatekeeper, it's transit the network in clear text.
First, the gatekeeper will request the client for the number or for the authorization, the username.
When the terminal registers to the gatekeeper with
yes.
his own telephone number, the user ID sent and also the password, it's in clear text or is encrypted?
Usually it's in clear text, but you can implement a lot of authorizations, for example, with checksums or something like that. So it depends on the gatekeeper. So you can build in that into the gatekeeper. That isn't clearly defined inside the H23 protocol type. Okay? Oh, some more questions. You, please.
What possibilities do you see for integration of voice over IP with other internet protocols and applications, for example, with instant messaging, whiteboards, or integrating it into my web browser, sending a URL during a telephone call? I think things like that would make voice over IP
much more
attractive than just phoning someone. I mean, that works already.
In H23, it's hard to implement. SIP is based on it. It can. It's also based as an instant messaging protocol. So, and I would say this will be a part of SIP in the future. So, SIP can also do the bring your access to the World Wide Web or can receive emails, and H3-3, I don't think that is possible. It's really voice over IP or really voice or video and not these features more in H3-3. Okay? Yes, you please.
Another technical question, can I build up a bigger network out of H323 gatekeepers? You told us that it scales badly, or no. And other concepts like zone delegation or master-slave, can I connect them to a bigger network so that a gatekeeper in Australia finds me in Germany
yes,
with
yes,
my gatekeeper?
Yes, this is possible. You can tell gatekeepers that it has neighbor gatekeepers, and this. And if the gatekeeper doesn't find the user, it will ask the neighbor gatekeepers. So, for example, if you are in Australia, you said, so the gatekeeper here in Germany will ask some more gatekeepers until it reaches the gatekeeper in Australia. And this gatekeeper in Australia says, yo, I know this user, and gives the number back. You can do that, yes. And you can also do broadcasting messages. So if you don't know the real neighbor gatekeepers, you can do broadcasting messages and assess all gatekeepers that are in this network. It's possible in HTTP/3. Okay? The last question?
You told us SIP uses DNS, but I don't know any DNS server which serves the correct SIP server for a connection to another SIP server. That's an extension to DNS. Is there any plan from the time when we do we have DNS servers with that extension which serves as SIP servers?
Oh, I don't know, sorry. The Columbia University does a lot of that because the name, the person Henning Schulzwinner is from there. He wrote a lot in SIP. And he developed it, I would say, as the first man, and maybe you will find something on these pages. Sorry, I don't know. Some other questions? I don't think so. Yes, thanks a lot for listening to my bad English. And have a fine day.